what I said to get restarted. Here, I made a lot of claims. And in particular, there was the claim that the free fermion partition function, which somewhat abstractly are here defined as conformal block evaluated on the trivial VOA element, can be normalized in such a way that all these nice properties having to do with the symplectic geometry, symplectic and complex geometry of the space of local systems are satisfied. And that is a non-trivial claim that I'm making here. And I wanna maybe just start now giving you some idea what's behind. What I shall start with, and this I want to draw your attention to before I change the slide, is a consequence of these two properties, which here are introduced in a somewhat axiomatic fashion, denoted I and double I. So let's just slowly look at them one more time. There was Lev Rogansky's question, I believe, about the notation delta R. Just means we're having here always vectors of variables, eta alpha 1 to eta alpha 3g minus 3 plus n. And delta r is just a vector which has at the rth position 1 and otherwise 0 in order to indicate sort of elementary shift of the rth variable. So this is what is being used here for sigma and here for eta. And here we have just periodicity. Okay, well, if the function is periodic, maybe we want to do Fourier transform. And there's a second property which will tell us the Fourier transform has a certain form. Namely, this here is what is immediate consequence of these two properties. There must exist a Fourier transform from periodicity with respect to eta, right? Eta only appears here. And the periodicity with respect to eta, that was a property double I, it is manifest in this form. And the second property, which was called I, is guaranteed by saying that the Fourier coefficients have a very special form, I mean, like here, that they are just shifts, translates of one and the same function with respect to sigma variables. So this is direct consequence of I if you do a little calculation. So if you shift here, say sigma by one unit, well, of course you're changing summation index n then to absorb it here in this argument. But then if you shift the summation index here in the exponential, you will spit out a factor e to the 2 pi eta, well, the eta of the respective coordinate. So this is relatively simple and you can more or less trace it here online. So these are consequences of these two properties. There exists such an expansion, but this expansion is gonna be extremely important for us. And I really like to stress it has many very remarkable properties. Okay, so we are here gonna talk about coordinates of Fenchel-Newton type associated to pan-stick compositions. How they're defined in more detail, I hope we will learn in other talks. Maybe Fei Yan will, for example, explain this in more detail. But we don't need really the detailed definition here. Just we need to know they exist and have certain properties. The statement, the next statement I want to make is that what is known about what we just get when we here take free fermion conformal block and take advantage of these properties, assuming that they exist, but well, we know they exist by the story I'm reporting here. You're defining in this way some functions, right? So you could take the point of view that these functions f are just sort of by this transform defined coefficients, Fourier coefficients of the free fermion conformal blocks. But the remarkable conjecture and by now theorem of several people is that what appears here has a different interpretation. Namely, it also comes from CFT. It's the conformal block of the Rasoro algebra, in this case at C equals to 1. So, and we're going to exhibit this as a kind of non-abelian version of Poissonization relations in just a moment, in fact, closely related to the story we had here, namely these types of expansion. So this is closely related, I believe. Okay, but for the time being, again, this is a summary of claims I'm making here, and we shall soon start in indicating where these claims come from. So the fact that, well, there is a different incarnation of the guy on the left, which we introduced as free fermion partition function. This was already known for a while in different ways to be related to another important object in integrable models, the so-called isomonodromic tau function. So it's basically an old result of Japanese school, Jimbo Miwa et al., that free fermion partition functions represent isomonodromic tau functions. Although here in this story, it gets a modern reformulation. Anyway, these guys, free fermion partition functions, they coincide, and that is an interesting story in its own right, which I don't want to go into, with the isomonodromic tau functions. That is nice, by the way, because by very nice work of Gavrilenko-Lissowy and Kafasso-Gavrilenko-Lissowy and so on, and generalized in our work, these guys are known to admit Fredholm determinant representations. What that means is that quite in some generality, the guys we're talking about here on the left are very well defined, very rigorously defined mathematical objects, analytic objects. Fredholm determinant representation makes clear these guys here have analytic or possibly, depending on normalizations, meromorphic continuation with respect to all the variables they depend upon. And secondly, they're absolutely rigorously defined. That's the state of affairs here on the left. Okay, so these are here known and interesting, somewhat sophisticated objects. These are quite highly transcendental special functions of these variables. And the remarkable discovery of Gamaliel and Yorgov-Lissowy, abbreviated GIL, was that if we consider this type of expansion of these guys here, the isomonodromic tau functions, what comes out here also has this VOA interpretation, namely as conformal block of some other VOA, which is Virasoro. Okay, so that is already beautiful and quite remarkable discovery. What I want to elaborate a little bit is the method of proof that Yorgov-Lissowy and myself used in order to derive this formula, to prove it. So this, on the other hand, by the way, also has, I mean, this what was motivating actually GIL is another thing that I cannot talk about, which is AGT correspondence, etc., because they had observed that the series expansions that are provided by the Nekrasov partition function representations of conformal blocks actually do the job to compute the tau functions, which are otherwise hard to compute using the nonlinear equations that define them from Levy 6, et cetera, et cetera. That's the kind of business that is behind these tau functions ultimately. Anyway, but here we're in the VOA world, and we want to understand this basically as a kind of VOA relation between free fermions and the Rasoro algebra. And I already mentioned or partly explained these Poissonization relations, which simply is, if you like, a VOA relation, which is that we can build free fermion VOA generators from the generate fields of the Rasoro at C equals to 1 and an auxiliary free boson. And yeah, and this is sort of the going to be the key to the understanding of this formula. And from this formula, ultimately, sort of in the work with Joanna, Ellie, and Pietro, basically, well, we started ultimately from this formula and tried to understand sort of what's so special about the coordinates sigma and eta, which is in there, and we ultimately arrived at the picture summarized on this slide. So that was, so I'm presenting this here in reverse historical order, which seems convenient in order to get sort of the main statements across most quickly. Anyway, so we want to use these Poissonization relations in order to basically start here, because what we can do, we know a lot about the general fields of Virasoro algebra, and we want to understand why this kind of funny linear combination of Fourier transform has a chance to be related to the free fermion partition function twisted with a local system. All right, so here are the main ideas step by step. And it is a sort of non-Abelian Poissonization. So what you may have heard when you've heard about conformal field theory is that there is a gluing construction of conformal blocks, which just uplifts the Pan's decomposition of Riemann surfaces. We start with conformal blocks on pairs of Pan's, and there is a construction forming conformal blocks on a glued surface from the conformal blocks on the pairs of Pan's. The upshot is that this defines conformal blocks. Here our interest is in conformal blocks of the Virasoro algebra, which are labeled by, well, however you define your Pan's decomposition, so for which we pick a collection of simple, closed, non-intersecting curves. And we assign a representation label, which is here our sigma r, right? So the sigma r here appears as a representation label for the different representations of the Virasoro algebra, giving us the highest weights of Virasoro representations. And we have one such guy for each cutting curve. So there's a one-to-one correspondence. So yeah, and this we glue together and so on. So we're basically then having conformal blocks labeled by the data of a, what you can call it, a measured lamination, or yeah, it's just a collection of curves colored by these representation labels that we need as data for families of these conformal blocks. Okay, here comes sort of the main observation, which already could resemble and remind sort of the way we have defined the twisting of free fermion conformal blocks. And we can define something like quantum monodromies by, well, here considering expectation values of the degenerate fields inserted into Virasoro conformal blocks. However, now the specific Virasoro conformal blocks, which are coming from the gluing construction. So these are, if you wish, providing you a family of basis vectors for the space of Virasoro conformal blocks. And okay, so for each fixed choice of these colored collection of curves, you're having a conformal block, you can compute these guys. And then you can wonder about, okay, can we compute the analytic continuation of this here with respect to the arguments X and Y? And you can do that. That's in some parts of CFT community, of course, a very well-known game. It basically uses these operations of Moore-Seiberg groupoid. But I mean, you don't have to know all that. It's ultimately conceptually, it's just a simple consequence of the fact that these guys satisfy second order differential equations, which basically allow you to integrate the holonomy. I mean, it's slightly more complicated, but to compute the parallel transport along closed curves on the Riemann surface C and represent it as, yeah, what? Here is sort of the key sort of like structural observation to be made. So if we have here this kind of two-point function again as a gadget representing our conformal blocks, and we compute here, this is indicated by this notation gamma dot y, we compute the monodromy along gamma of that two-point function, it can be represented as a kind of operator valued monodromy. What do I mean by this? We have here, say in our case, we're now for the case n equals to 2. So it's a 2 by 2 matrix whose entries R Laurent polynomial in, what's that? VR is e to the derivative with respect to sigma r. So it is nothing but the operator, which when it acts on any function of sigma, it shifts the argument sigma by unit one. We, just for notational convenience, we're considering here a right action. So the derivative here wants to act to the left because, yeah, we wanted to write the monodromy matrix to the right for some conventional reasons. But I hope this isn't too confusing. So the point is, of course, yeah, this doesn't preserve the sigma, but it gives us another member of the family of conformal blocks that we have defined up here from the gluing construction, right? So we stay in the same space of conformal blocks that we had introduced up here. Yeah, and furthermore, sort of the coefficients of, say, powers of this operator VR, which appear in these quantum monodromy matrices, this is how we can interpret them. These are nothing but rational functions in UR, in the other variable, exponential of the other variable. So these are sort of the key structural features that we'll be using for arriving at the claims I'm making here. All right, now let's now note, okay, the simple computational relations of operators VR and UR. What are they? Well, we just compute, right? We just remember what these operators were. And if you act here with VR on UR, it shifts, as I said, sigma R by one. So we're getting an e to the two pi I and the reordered combination of operators UR, VR. But yeah, you may remember e to the two pi I happens to be just one. So they commute. So we're at a particular value of deformation parameter Q where these guys just commute. And this is one way of understanding, I mean, this brings us to one way of understanding this funny transform, which we could now just also apply on the sigma dependence here of the two-point function. Well, right, of course, the two-point function will reproduce the partition function if I just bring x to y and then this annihilates to the trivial or the vacuum representation. Anyway, we can just apply the same transform as was in this magic GIL formula. Now we can just apply it to the two-point functions. So what does this transformation then do to the quantum monodromies, right? Just imagine you're doing the analytic continuation here with respect to y on the right-hand side. Well, it gave us this operator valued matrix M sub gamma, which has here the V and so on. But now, well, it will do, for example, if there is in the quantum monodromy some operator VR, it will just shift the sigma down here, right? But this can be absorbed or removed by, say, a shift of the summation index spitting out e to the 2 pi I eta r. In other words, this here, this Fourier transform, simply what it does is, I mean, due to this form, it simultaneously diagonalizes the two commuting operators UR and VR, which happen to govern the functional dependence of our quantum monodromy matrices. Therefore, well, really what it does is it maps our quantum monodromy to a classical monodromy, namely nothing but the representation of the surface group that is associated, that is parametrized by the parameters sigma and eta. And okay, if you do the necessary geometric supplements, you will realize the sigma and the eta, while they're both assigned to the cutting curves in some way, they're really what is called Fenchel-Newton type coordinates for the space of local systems. So we can at least locally define here families of local systems, representations of the surface group, which are parametrized by the same variable sigma and eta as appear in all this game. What this means is that this guy here, the two-point function, has the monodromies of the twisted conformal block of the free fermion algebra. So now all that remains is to remember, well, also the OPE is all right, because this is what we checked at the beginning. So OPEs are all right, and monodromies are all right. This guy is the two-point function of free fermion algebra. So, and in this sense, this transformation, therefore, the upshot is, to summarize this discussion, the transformation in this GIL formula, it relates VOA, there are Sorow conformal blocks to free fermion conformal blocks, where then here the thing on the right becomes the twisted free fermion two-point function, and all this business here of GIL formula and so on, what it does is to introduce a very specific way of twisting with coordinates that are natural, sort of naturally attached to Pant's compositions. Okay, of course, that brings another issue, which is, just one Pant's decomposition won't be good enough. It won't cover the space of local systems. We need to talk about all possible Pant's decompositions and then somehow patch this the local pictures associated to a particular Pant's decomposition together. And here are the sort of key features. Namely, there's these tau functions. And the claim is, so this was part of the, say nutshell formulation of our claims, was that when we have a chart with coordinates sigma and eta, and another chart with coordinates sigma alpha, eta alpha, and another chart with coordinates sigma beta, eta beta, they each define tau functions satisfying GIL type formulae like here. So this holds basically chart by chart. And then the question is, how about the ratio? Well, the ratio, what this says here, is something that only depends on the, locally, we are on an intersection of two charts in the space of local systems. It only depends on the local systems, but not on, say, the choice of a complex structure on the underlying Riemann surface. And such type of, as already emphasized, such type of transformation, so that this is just a simple multiplicative factor, they will preserve the existence of these expansions exactly if these relations here hold. Right? So this is necessary and sufficient for the fact that both in alpha and eta coordinates, we have these GIL type Fourier expansions. So this is just what you need to preserve this property, having GIL type Fourier expansion when you go, say, from a chart alpha to chart beta. Okay, and good. What is sort of a technical part of our work is you have to make sure that this system of equation, what you should think it is defined by is, of course, nothing but the change of coordinates between the charts. We have in one chart coordinates sigma alpha eta alpha, and the other sigma beta eta beta, and then we just construct the function from the change of coordinates. And the question is, do the solutions with good analytic properties exist? The answer is yes. And the crucial building block for doing this, which then we needed to generalize, was provided by work of Jorgov, Lisovit, and Tyki, namely that is the solution of the corresponding problem for the four-punctured sphere. So as often in CFT, by the game of Pant's decompositions, you can reduce things to a four-punctured sphere or one-punctured torus. And these people did it in important work for four-punctured sphere. And then we observed in the work with Joanna and Pietro that this basically, with a little bit of work, is good enough to conclude that these guys here, which are the transition functions of Olein bundle, after all, they exist in general. So for arbitrary changes of, these Fenchelian type coordinates. All right, so that is part of the claims here. Okay, that is another maybe good moment to stop and ask for questions. There is a third part where I want to indicate some observations and conjectures for how the story should generalize to, well, to these theories that Tudor et al. were studying. But maybe there is something about this part you want to ask.
Oh, good. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Okay, if there are no questions, maybe I just go on, then that's probably time for later, but okay, maybe I go on. No? All right, so good. Yeah, this is called a collection of observations and conjectures, and just have a look and see if you think this is worth another thought. Basically, things according to Tudor and friends get interesting when K is larger than one, because then we're getting Fagin to Punin and so on. But what I already emphasized is in this representation as extension of W algebras or for n equals to 2, the Virasoro algebra. Yeah, of course, it's maybe not so absurd to expect that sort of a lot will be implied by what we know about W and Virasoro algebra representation theory. So what we could think about is simply doing a similar game as we just played to prove this GIL type formula, the GIL conjecture. It can be done, and that is a simple observation in a sense for any k rather easily. But there are some important and perhaps interesting changes that happen, and I want to point them out. So the starting point is, of course, yeah, to try to play a very similar game. We're having now Virasoro representation theory, but the central charge is determined by, some parameter k, by the parameter k, in such a way that, the corresponding quantum group q would be e to the pi I over k. But of course, yeah, as far as Virasoro goes, we know a bit about the representation theory, and in particular about monodromies of degenerate fields in that case. So we can just try for that case also to compute quantum monodromies by analytically continuing the positions of degenerate fields. And I claim that it is not very hard to see, just following sort of the same arguments that we used in the proof of GIL formula in the work with Yorgov and Lissavy, that the form, well, there is one important difference to begin with. It's equals to one. So, I mean, as you may remember or should know about Virasoro representation theory, for generic C, there are two types of basic degenerate fields satisfying second order differential equations. Standard notation is referring to Katz's table, speak of 2,1 or 1,2 type. So there are two basic degenerate fields, both satisfying second order differential equation, and for C equals to one, they just happen to coincide. There is a degeneracy at C equals to one. For C not equals to one, they're distinct and they're, yeah. And yeah, the consequence is we can now define two types of such two-point functions and associated monodromies. So we can continue with respect to one type of degenerate field or the other. And the structure of the, say, quantum monodromy matrices is different in the two cases. So for one, we find the Laurent polynomial in VR, which is e to the 1 over k, d sigma. So in some convenient variables, and then the corresponding variable sigma would appear in the combinations exponential 2 pi I sigma. And you can make the check, or already here we're doing it, sort of the algebra satisfied by these operators is of wild type again, as before, but now with a non-triple q, which is just this root of this even root of unity here. I mean, that's clear because we just basically divided here. We produced the 1 over k before the derivative. All right, the other one, then it turns out, is obtained in a very simple way. Basically, you just need to raise these guys here to the power k. And you're getting then these operators. So we're having now these two, in a sense, dual types of quantum monodromes, 4k bigger than 1. But again, it's nothing but a relatively easy consequence of what we know about the Genov fields in Bersola algebra. But that appears to have interesting consequences. Namely, what we could try to do is sort of to mimic this idea, this observation that, yeah, what GIL did was, after all, when there was here q squared just 1, which happens when k equals to 1, yeah, maybe we can just do something similar when k is not equals to 1. Well, we could shift here sigma by p over k, where p is an arbitrary element in a vector of elements of zk. And thereby, what we're producing in this kind of generalized Fourier transform is actually, well, a vector which depends on the variables sigma and eta, and the vector space this lives in actually has dimension k to the 3g minus 3, because for each cutting curve, we're having then k choices of a corresponding integer p, and well, it's of course an integer modulo k again, right? So there's k different choices. Well, that's what it is. Okay, so this kind of transform may seem natural in this context, and so why not apply it? And good. So, I mean, here a bit schematic, we see what it is. It maps the VRs, which is e to the 1 over k derivative, to something which just shifts p by one unit. So it's kind of represented by a kind of shift matrix. And what's perhaps the main observation to be made is that the V check, that is this guy here, which again is just e to the derivative, again is diagonalized by this transform. And what that implies is that the M check is becoming again classical local system. So it is defining a classical local system. Now, however, the one associated to parameters k times sigma, comma eta. But the same parameterization as before, right? So we had coordinate sigma and eta, generalized Fenchel Newton type, parameterizing locally, families of local systems, basically with the same parameterization as before for a fixed Pansky composition. The M checks after the transform, so when acting here on that side, they become classical. So what we're having here is a kind of quite remarkable situation, I find, namely the quantum monodromy that we are getting from the Bersola representation theory is mapped by this generalized GIL type transform to a quantum monodromy, because we still have here quantum stuff in the form of the generators VR, TR, and these monodromy matrices M gamma. But all this is basically defined on the background of a classical local system. Actually, there should be the K here as well. Okay, I think it's an interesting observation which is worth further study. In order somehow to indicate that this is probably hinting at a much, much larger story, I want to go away from these Fenchel-Newton coordinates, which were used up to now for the reason that conformal field theory, hence the composition, is most simple to realize. And the Fenchel-Newton coordinates happen to be the coordinates appropriate for Penz decompositions. However, one can switch to Fokontrov type coordinates thanks to the following observations. That is sort of the next claim slash observation here. What's that? So the first key observation to be made is we can find this difference generating function, right? These, after all, were relating tau functions corresponding to different choices of the Wu coordinates. Such guys exist also when sigma and eta alpha and sigma and eta beta are of mixed type. So one of them for Kontrov, one of them Fentschel-Nielsen. That is a technical claim, which I just ask you to believe me for the moment, which was argued for in our paper with Joanna and Pietro. And it uses a crucial building block from work of Itzlisovy and Tücki, sort of as the basic elementary step associated to the annulus. That is what can be extracted from their work. And from that, I claim, with a little bit of experience from the old times of quantum Teichmuller theory and so on, that we can build these guys also for these Fokontrov Fentschel-Nielsen transitions. There exist these difference generating functions for Fokontrov Fentschel-Nielsen transitions. Well, having said this, of course, we're immediately in the game because we can extend the definition of these tau functions also to the charts which have Fokontrov type coordinates attached to them. So to whatever we're getting from triangulations rather than Penz decompositions, because I mean, after all, the triangulations and the Penz decompositions, they form groupoids. And so if you basically make the transition from one to the other for one pair, then you're in business, then it just propagates through the whole groupoid of Penz decompositions and triangulations. So we have the whole business also now for, and the definition of these tau functions also for Fokontrov coordinates. And immediate and very interesting thing to think about is, well, there certainly exist also when sigma and alpha are now coming from Fokontrov coordinates, expansions of this form. To find something here, which have a, has a good like quantum mechanical interpretation, if you like, and so on, but not go into this. But of course, you don't no longer expect it to have a simple relation to conformal blocks from gluing construction. So what these are in CFT terms, I'd really like to know. But in any case, when you now do the same games here about classical versus quantum monodromies, then you would here find, say, quantum monodromies represented by quantum Fokontrov coordinates, et cetera, et cetera. So this would just be a consequence of this definition using this thing here as a starting point. And okay. Furthermore, of course, yeah, as I said, the whole game of coordinate changes, it just propagates. So there's also then going to be transition functions relating the tau functions of different charts, if different Fokontrov charts. Well, they will be built by solving these equations here for the usual cluster type coordinate changes of Fokontrov coordinates. So you just have to solve then these conditions. You can do that. But as it turns out, you can build the solution actually from the classical dialogue rhythm, because we're here at this particular root of unity. And well, somewhat remarkably so, these guys can be built from the classical dialogue rhythm. So in other words, you can describe our line bundle that I claim to exist, not only in terms of these Fentschel-Nielsen coordinates, but equally well in terms of Fokontrov coordinates with transition functions, which are now our G alpha beta, built from exponentials of classical dialogue rhythms. And well, that's an object that maybe some of you have thought about already in the past. Somebody who, yeah, okay, there's the remark, okay, a little later. Anyway, so some who have thought about something closely related in the past already are actually Fokin Goncharov, and just last week I met Sasha, and he told me that ultimately this paper he wants to put out, perhaps, hopefully I motivated him, I added a little bit of motivation by telling about this story. Let me indicate why, what we have in this particular case. So here again, sorry, let me be very clear. Here I return temporarily for to C equals one, that is K equals one case. But now when we are in the cluster world of Fokontrov and so on, what happens if we look at K larger than one in terms of cluster mutations, quantum versus classical, and how they're represented? So let's start with some quantum cluster variety. So we have basic variables or generators satisfying relations like that. The quantum cluster transformation or changes of variables map, they will look like here. Let's not look into the details too much. And there, it's known how to build trace functions from quantum trace map. Now, just what I want to point out is that at roots of unity in the cluster world, again, closely related remarkable phenomena happen. I mean, there's a large center which is generated by the power k of the basic generators. You can represent it by multiplication. And if you just then compute what this here does to kth powers, it does this, namely it reproduces classical cluster transformations. So again, what we have here is the situation to have a quantum cluster variety defined on the background of a classical one. By the way, this, that the kth powers become classical is a consequence of this remarkable little identity holding for vowel type commuting variables, because it's sort of the stupid way of doing binomial expansion, right? So it is true things are non-commutative, then, and that's sort of what gives you this with just a few lines. Okay, I think I'm running out of time, I'm afraid. In any case, I want to end with sort of two bold and maybe at this point a little far-fetched conjectures, but the following would represent a natural generalization of the story that I think is reasonably well understood, maybe with some details left to be worked out for k equals to one, which would extend them to k bigger than ones. I mean, the spaces of conformal blocks of the DOAs E and K, twisted by generic local systems, carry a natural structure of a holomorphic vector bundle with connection over this product space local systems cross moduli of complex structures of Riemann surfaces. And second, I already mentioned that already, I think several years ago, Fokin Goncharov and some up to now unpublished work, they have studied the geometric quantization of the space of local systems. And I mean, what else can it be then equivalent to what the CFT gives? So what they did sort of just in terms of cluster coordinates and quantization, I think is likely to reappear in the context of VOA and things, I mean, the games like we described. All this, let me just make it very briefly as a remark, was avoiding singular loci where twisting local systems become degenerate. And what I extract from the work of Tudor and friends is that analyzing degenerations should be very interesting, exhibiting maybe derived structures, et cetera, and maybe having a holomorphic structure on the space of local systems as reflected in this line bundle or vector bundle can help ultimately, because it would be natural if it's kind of encoded then in how the generic thing degenerates. Anyway, this is a bold speculation, but to me, it looks like a very interesting thing to look at. And good, yeah, maybe with this, I wanna stop and let me maybe just briefly, I don't really have much of a substance to say here. Just, I want to mention that in that game of corner VOAs, by replacing, for example, Neumann-type boundary conditions by Dirichlet-type boundary conditions, One can reintroduce Lie algebra symmetry, affine Lie algebra symmetry, and can then also play with a twisting of holomorphic bundles as yet another ingredient. And then, well, as many people have studied and many things are known about, one gets a picture which shares many ingredients with a CFT approach to geometric Langlands correspondence after Berlin, Greenfeld, Fagin, Frankel, where conformal blocks of affine Lie algebra at critical level give us D modules on bund G. Twisting with three Czech local systems is related to Hecker eigenvalue property, and so on and so forth. And I hope we hear more about this in this week. So many aspects of the geometric Langlands correspondence have already been understood from Niels Forss, Super, Young, Mills. Tiny little thing is sort of if we go away from the critical level, there is a quantum monodromy of degenerate fields representing Hecker modifications, which turn into classical local system in the critical level limit. This I observed more than 10 years ago. This resembles what we're seeing here. So in any case, all what I'm saying here, I think in points in the direction that what I've been talking about in this talk is part of several generalizations of geometric Langlands correspondence, which arise in the context of an explore. Super, yeah, good. Thanks for patience and attention.
Thanks very much. That was a really set of ideas. Are there any questions from the audience? I want to say, so the last thing, well, one of the last things you said at that singular list, what I was hoping to ask you more about. So the story we had, these sheaves would jump. If over, say, the trivial local system, the stock of the sheaf would jump, and the drag setting get an infinite dimensional stock. Do you see any hints at all for behavior like that, or are you just explicitly working away from?
Yeah. Okay. Good. Thanks. Thanks for asking. Good. But of course, you're dragging me into the speculative part. I was, of course, staying away, for example, from trivial local systems. However, what one can see is that these tau functions. And so on, they do funny things. I mean, okay, first of all, there are variables parametrizing generic local systems. And part of, well, you can go to limits where maybe, for example, the twisting elements along particular cycles become trivial. And what I can partly see or anticipate is that funny things happen. Holds, for example, of the tau functions appear there. So the vision, the dream one can have is that in fact, the behavior that you're interested in is actually secretly encoded in the analytic properties of these tau functions defined away from degenerate loci or trivial local systems. When you then carefully study degenerations towards more degenerate local systems, maybe all the way to trivial local system. That is indeed sort of something I would like to study and discuss with you guys, because I think this could be very interesting. But for the moment, yeah, that's it. And there's another thing, by the way, that I would maybe, well, I find hard not to mention. There is, which is also, I think, it's maybe not exactly what you're asking, but may at least be morally related. There other very interesting things happen when the Riemann-Hilbert problem defined by a local system does not have a standard solution. What then happens is that the tau function vanishes. And that is a very famous phenomenon in the world of tau functions related to, well, what is called Lagrange divisor and so on. Also, this, I think, wants to have an interpretation maybe in this context, and it could be something interesting.
Thanks. Any other questions online? Thank you again.
Okay, thank you.